for the players.
Ted's was always this weird little time where I just kind of sit here and say a bunch of nonsense until it hits 18 seconds. Then I go, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast. Over 40 years of playing PlayStation and 15 plus years in this game's media combined. I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you're listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watch us on YouTube. Be sure to like, subscribe, and comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, as well as the merchandise store, popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shit and other sort of shit with our logos on it. Now, I just made a mistake, Max. What, when your intro, when your part started, there was like a bug on my light, on my Elgato little lighty doohickey. I smushed it because I was like, fuck that bug. And now there is a big smear on my light. And now that I know it's there, it's going to frustrate me this entire time.
I'll see you in 5.
No, I'll just keep looking at it and get angry, I guess. Let's see if I can do. How's things? How's the week?
Week's been alright.
Ah, I fixed it. That was quick.
got a bit sick on Friday. I'm like, pre-pax pox. Love it. Munged on the cold and flu tablets all weekend. I'm pretty much over it now, which is good.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, most people, like, yeah, get sick post-packs because you go there and everyone's just fucking gross. And then, yeah, you get sick. But thankfully, if you get it out early, you should be...
Immune.
Yeah, you've done it. You've got that pre-exposure.
And then, obviously, just, you know, getting excited for next week. Mm. Realizing that I only have to work 3 days this week is exciting me. I'm doing a little bit of prep work for next weekend in case all things turn crazy. Wrote a killer opening line, in my opinion.
So speaking of PAX, might I add, so we mentioned this last week, but let's touch upon it again. So we will be at PAX covering all the things, getting there like we used to, tons of fun. Obviously no PlayStation this year, so a little bit different coverage from us. Shuhei Yoshida's there, so maybe I'll hunt him down and be like, hey, man, you're pretty cool. And that's probably the only conversation I have with him because I'll be very starstruck, absolutely. But on Thursday, 4:30 p.m., a panel will be hosted by myself and a newly created friend, Doob Cutie, where they're doing the console clash, PlayStation.
He means Saturday, everyone, not Thursday.
Yeah, not Thursday at all. It'll be Saturday. It'll be Saturday. Why the fuck did I say Thursday?
Why are you doing a thing on Thursday?
I know why. I'll explain why in a moment. Because you know how you said you took time off? Yeah, I got Thursday, Friday, and then Monday off. And I was like, shit, I only have like 2 days of work. And then Monday is public holiday in New South Wales. My company runs out of New South Wales, so there's no one there to tell me what to do or to monitor what I'm doing. So kind of only have to work 2 days this week. But yes, panel. Was it, sorry?
Nothing.
I shouldn't have put that on the internet, shouldn't I? Oh, yeah, 4:30 Saturday, Kookaburra Theatre, I believe. We'll be doing a panel, PlayStation versus Xbox, big old debate, the console clash. Due to some unforeseen circumstances, a good friend of the show, Paul James, will likely have to step out of the panel, which leaves a void in PlayStation creators that can say things on a stage. And I was like, I know a guy. And I avoided this guy initially because that seemed like nepotism. And then I remembered that two of the three people on the panel are also friends of mine. So nepotism was already there. So Max is joining the panel now.
It's weird for me to fill in for Padge for once. Normally it's the reverse situation.
It is. And Padge is some big shoes to fill in the space.
Very big. Very big.
But it should be exciting. So it's not like a debate in the traditional sense. I've talked about it before, but... the idea is we're going to get PlayStation creators, Xbox creators, have them debate, but they are forced to go to the other side. So Max, as a PlayStation creator, you are, excuse me, you are responsible for fighting the good fight for Microsoft at this panel.
Yep, easy. I was told that no one would be fact checking, so there's just gonna be fucking wild allegations.
Yeah, so that's where myself, Doom Cutie, and myself are kind of like the host and or moderators, I guess. So something is just blatantly wrong, we may have to step in, but depending on how, like if you say, oh, it should, maybe go, it may or it could, you know, you keep it vague enough, might be able to come out of it.
I've got like a 25-minute speech on, at least we know what our face buttons are called.
Oh, it's going to be a treat. But no, I am very, very excited for PAX. Like, it's interesting. This is the first year that we're sort of doing something like this, because obviously I'm on two panels on this one, which I'm hosting, which is insane. And then, excuse me, later that night, I am as part of another panel. Yeah, it just feels interesting to be doing that, because it makes PAX feel different. But speaking of different, like, there are some differences. Like, normally we'll be recording a podcast on the floor as part of the Audio Technica booth. However, they're not there this year. So we may just cram ourselves in a corner somewhere and talk, you know, into microphones for a little bit. We may wait and then do it on the Monday night or something. So heads up, next episode might be slightly delayed. But there should be some videos and stuff coming out over the weekend too. Now, Max, is this the first PAX you might be able to do a couple of days?
Yeah, I'll definitely be there Friday, Saturday.
Mm.
It'll just depend on what's happening, because I do technically have a family birthday on the Sunday, so it'll depend on how my guilt plays into it, and whether or not I guilt myself into doing the right thing and coming to PAX.
Yeah, well, because, yeah, it's like the challenge that you're going to be facing is like, is it,
I'm like it's a first birthday.
Yeah, it's not whether you'll feel guilty or not, because we touched upon it last week, but I guess the because you're going to feel guilty, you're going to, whichever one you pick, like, you're in a tough position.
Because the other thing is, so
which guilt can you live with, Max?
Well, for the first time ever, my parents are coming down for Christmas.
Oh yeah,
and The person whose birthday party is my cousin's firstborn child.
Mm-hmm.
And mum kind of invited them all to come to Christmas. And then I cracked the shits. I'm like, can you not fucking invite people to my house without talking to me first?
Yeah.
So mum sent them a big long spiel saying, Max, crack the shits, you're uninvited.
Holy shit, did this just increase the stakes?
Which is fine. I'm super happy to be thrown under the bus. Like,
Now if you don't go, you're going to look really pricky.
Yeah, I know, right? So that's hence the problem.
Mm. Well, for those of you listening and watching at home, be sure to let us know in the comments what Max should do. So, yeah, Big Shep asks, how's the view up from under the bus, Max?
Welcome to Days of Our Lives. I told her to throw me under the bus. I'm like, make me the bad guy, it's fine. I'm quite happy to play the role of villain.
I guess the real question is, like, A, would these...
My care factors are fairly small.
Would the cousins watch this show?
No, fuck no.
Excellent. So, like, how... Do you like them that much? Like,
yeah. We see each other once a year on our birthdays. And that's it.
All right. Well, then, yeah. Well, then, have you already met... Have you already... Has that already taken place this year?
No, we skipped it this year.
Oh. So you are in a predicament. You're adding worse layers for yourself, Max. You could have resolved it if you did the birthday thing.
And it would be only my second time meeting my new second cousin on his first birthday.
They're one. You know how many other more years they're going to have?
Oh, well, I mean, hopefully more than one.
Exactly my point.
Hopefully many.
Kids are really resilient. Like, yes, granted, you have less potential years in you than this random child, but like...
Oh, vastly. Vastly.
But yeah, But yeah, like my week's been pretty chill. I haven't had to dodge any birthday parties, thankfully. Did have a wrestling show this weekend, so that was lovely. It was a really, really good show. I enjoyed it. Driving back was rough because it's over in Seaford, which is the other side of Victoria, the state that which we live in. So we didn't get home till about 1-ish. And then, because obviously I had a child, because he slept before we left, woke up, was awake the entire drive. So there was a little bit of energy when we came back. I'm like, all right, how am I going to get him down before like fucking 3 in the morning?
Hello.
Yeah, that was the option. I was like, just fucking full Nelson, just like choke him out, like, fucking, and put him down.
You tried those like the melatonin tablets?
Yeah, I was just going to punch him in the face directly. I didn't even think about medication.
Same, same, but different.
Yeah, so
give him the left, right, could not.
So thankfully that wasn't too bad. He did get us down pretty quickly after some struggle, but he fell asleep pretty quickly. Thanks to him. But yet, of course, you know, because of the daylight savings, we've lost an hour of sleep. So suddenly the room got brighter way earlier than it should have, and I wanted to die. So I am a bit knackered.
Incorrect. Incorrect. The sun comes up later.
Either way, I'd sucked and I woke up and then my fucking day was ruined and I didn't like it.
No, the sun comes up later.
And I don't care.
Out longer. That's the whole point of
daylight savings. I don't like it. Either way, my fucking sleep's bunged.
I big brained it and I went 158, 159, 3. Okay, bedtime. And I didn't lose my hour of sleep. I slept for the...
I remember 1 year. I remember working when I used to work overnights.
I worked at 1 year and I didn't get paid. I'm like, you can fuck
right. Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, that's fucking bull. Because I remember 1 year that I was like, yeah, and I didn't get paid. I was like, that's dumb. And then there was a year that I worked the other transition where you have to work an extra hour. Didn't get paid for that either. I'm like, so I've done more than my you know, regular approved hours and I didn't get paid? Fuck you. Very nice. Did not go well for me.
Overtime, you bastard.
Yeah, where's my cash? The Mullet Show, subscribe to Tier 1. They're subscribed for 79 months. Damn, that's pretty impressive. And they're on a 79-month streak. That's a fucking long-ass time. Thank you very much, The Mullet Show. But yeah, it's one of those chunks like, oh, but you know, it balances out. I'm like, not if you didn't work both, you idiot. Fuck, I don't miss working overnights, man. It's ball bags. Is daylight savings already? Yeah, man, we're just about to hit spring. So it's about to get all nice and bright and shit. It's lame.
Hay fever season, baby.
Oh, dude, I'm not looking forward to that because my face just wants to die on non-hay fever days. It's butt. Absolute butt. But yeah, so I'm fucking zonked and very sleepy. But other than that, it's been a pretty chill week. Not too much I'm up to. And Rock is here as well. Speaking of PAX, someone I really hope to run into at PAX is Jess. I haven't seen Jess in forever.
I'm hopefully just going to hang out at the tabletop session with Jess.
Yeah.
We're going to hit Lorcana. We're going to play some magic. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to try and get as much free swag as I possibly can.
it's like The Simpsons. It's Marge in the jacket at the candy convention.
I'm going to come out with so many fucking tote bags. I'm just... sweet, sweet loot.
What if you come prepared, just bring an empty, larger tote bag and then just pummel everything into that?
You mean, like, I probably will because I'll have a bag on me anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
I pack my Sammy.
Before we started recording, Max is like, I didn't pay my retro 3 weeks ago. I don't get paid for a little while. This is going to suck. I'm going to have to pack my lunch to PAX. I may not have fuel money.
the old pack lunch.
Dude, car rego is so fucking stupid. Rocker, you got to make sure I catch you both. Absolutely, absolutely. But before we get into the news and section as we do, because if anyone's clicked on the link, I'm sure it's just because of the title. Let's get in the section called What We Have Been Playing. Look, like every gaming podcast ever, it's a great way to start. What have you been playing, Max?
Played a little bit more VR. I've been playing...
The Max Mustard?
Still been kicking through Max Mustard. The game's still fucking amazingly good. Not too much more to report, though. I haven't played a ton. It's been a crazy week. Other than that, I have been playing more Astrobot with my child because she just, every time she rolls credits, she's like, let's start again.
Wait, as in, does she do all the levels and then rolls credit?
So the only levels that she hasn't beaten now are the boss levels, essentially.
Yeah.
She's not game enough to just try them herself. She's like, no, I can't do it. I'm like, you can. You probably
like, do. If you've done everything else, I can assure you, you can do it.
Like, you know, she beat... You know how some levels have, like, those mini-bosses? Like, the one in the tree where you, like, kill the chickens?
Yeah, yeah.
do that one. I'm like, you could do this one. It's not that much harder. Like, you'll be fine. She's like, no. I'm like, okay, fair enough. The big one I've been playing this.
So mute us in the chat here on Twitch. Is she good at the obstacles levels? So presumably the symbol levels.
Yeah. So we were just doing those. She was doing the lava duck one.
Oh fuck that level.
She got all the way to the end, died on the last jump.
Jesus Christ. When, like, in her first go?
No, it took like 3 attempts.
Oh my God, that's been like 85. That's embarrassing for me.
It's incredible watching her play and just watch how her mind works as she's doing it.
Yeah.
Even with just the normal levels, because she's done them all before, she's like, hey, Dad, every once in a while she'll be like, hey, Dad, I died, it's your turn. And I'll just run through stuff because I just want to get through the levels. So I'll be playing something on the PC at the same time.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, Dad, you missed the puzzle piece. You got to go back. I'm like, fuck the puzzle piece. What do you mean I missed the puzzle piece? Nice. She'll take the controller off me, go back and go get the puzzle piece and come back. She's like, see, I told you. I'm like, well, good. I'm glad that you've remembered where everything is. Okay? Let me play League of Legends. Go away. I can't help you right now. I'm playing my own game.
There's other things I'd like to do.
But the big one I've been playing this week is Throne and Liberty.
Yes.
Which is Amazon and NCSoft's new foray into an MMORPG. I have no idea what the fuck is going on in the story, but I'm having fun with it.
Well, that's exactly how I experienced, both kind of the Elder Scrolls Online, you want to talk MMOs, but also The Division and Outriders. And I adore all of those games.
So the gimmick here is whenever you do any form of traversal, you shift into an animal. So if you're sprinting, you shift into like a tiger or a lion or a leopard. Or then if you fly, if you jump off a high point, you can, instead of just pulling out like a glider or gliding, you transform into a bird. And then if you're swimming, you can transform into like an otter or something, an animal that swims. And that's kind of cool. It kind of changes the pace up a little bit. And then it's just your typical, you don't necessarily have a class. Your class is assigned by what weapons you have equipped. So you have a main hand and off hand, so you can run essentially two classes at once, and you can just switch weapons at any given time. You do get punished if you like chopping and changing.
Okay.
Because you have to use in-game materials to upgrade your skills and level those skills up. So if you waste too much materials on leveling this up and going, oh, I don't really like this, I'm going to go back and pick a different thing, you're so far behind the curve because you've wasted all of those materials leveling up something that you're never going to use again. So you kind of got to very quickly ascertain which direction you're going to play in. So I'm currently playing
in terms of going back and like creating a new character for a new build. Like, is the from there to there such an uncomfortable amount of time that'll impact you? Because you're saying if you have to dedicate yourself to one weapon type, like, does it take like 4 hours and you're like, oh, fuck, I go 4 hours again?
Well, I don't know if the tutorial can be skipped once you've done it once, because I haven't made a second character. So assuming that the tutorial...
Oh, session... sweet. All right. The Reverend Puck is in the chat filling us up with, you know, like, I don't know what the story was in this game or that game or this game. We're now getting the updates in the chat and I love it. So to confirmation, The Division was about a Russian man makes flu, taints money. Oh, I knew that part. Spreads on Christmas. Yep. Aaron Kerner kidnaps him and wants a stronger flu. Kenna hides in DC, then flees back to New York, beats some friends, kill Kena. Other people become traitors, and spoilers, Kena's not dead and he wants you to fight even badder people. Lots of cosmetics. I remember that part. Like, I don't remember the back end of that part. I assume that's what led into Division 2, because I spent more time playing Division 2. But yeah, sorry, Max. Yeah, so that turnaround time's not too bad?
Yeah, assuming you don't have to replay the tutorial area, it would be fine, I would imagine.
Because, like, I know as an example, we're being... like, I know Elder Scrolls Online is very different in that it allows a lot of flexibility and you can kind of change your class or weapons at your beck and call. But if you were to make a new character, the time at which you go new character to you're at a point where you can make that decision is like 20 minutes, not even.
So that's the one thing I liked about Final Fantasy Online is you didn't make... You had one character and then depending on what weapon was equipped, that's your class.
Yeah.
and you just go, you could level up every class equally. You could just go from 1 to 100 on one, then swap weapons and go 1 to 100 again. You just have to... you don't have to create... You're not punished for trying something out and then going, this isn't really me. Bam. Mm. Which is good.
So what weapon or class have you selected?
I'm using a two-handed staff and a sword and shield. So I'm essentially playing what I've referred to as like a battle mage.
Mm-hmm.
So I cast spells to begin with, and then one of the spells that I have is like a short like teleport. I teleport on top of an enemy, and it switches my weapon and instantly pulls out my sword and shield.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can tank a little bit, and then I have like a jump back attack. And as I do that, I can switch weapons and go back to casting from long range again. So the combat's pretty cool. It's fairly smooth. It's very flashy. I'm like level 20 at the moment, so end game is very far away. But for now, it's cool. I'm playing it every once in a while. Kind of when Hadley's playing Astrobot next to me here, I'll be playing Thingo over here on the PC.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. With it being an MMORPG. and you've stepped away from like Final Fantasy a little while ago. You tried to go back into Elder Scrolls. Like in the early days that you've been playing this, does this have the potential to be that next MMO for you?
Probably not, but it's something fun to do at the moment.
Yeah, which is exactly what Elder Scrolls has been to me.
Yeah.
In between game. Pardon me. And like I said, in true fashion, like, you know, you're playing an MMO, which makes sense for you. No surprise, I have been playing games that connect with me. So, thanks to Keymailer, I have been playing Clothing Store Simulator. Because, like, we all know how much I adore my simulators. And I love Max's instant, like, face of, oh, fuck. When I talk about Sims, he's like, all right, cool, this is going to...
I just want to hear about trading cards.
Oh, I'll get to that one shortly. this one caught my attention, mostly because coming off the back of Supermarket Simulator, I did enjoy it. I enjoyed the simplicity, the repetition of it all, because, you know, that's essentially what a simulator game is. It's a series of, like, mini tasks that are repeatable, and you feel, like, a good sense of completion and joy. And there's you know, always another carrot on the stick to help you progress. Come on, Zach. So this one I thought was intriguing because I have never worked in clothes retail. I don't care about fashion. And I was curious as to whether just by experiencing a game with that, I could maybe understand it or potentially be like, oh, maybe I get how clothes work. Not, and that does make sense. But I mean, as like a... if there's any sort of deeper AI or mechanisms around popularity of items, etc., etc. Nah, it's just a straight up like retail simulator with a different skin. Not a bad thing because exactly what I wanted. But the beauty of that, because I have no emotional connection to what should or shouldn't be considered good clothing, I just wear the clothes that I like. If there's a shirt that is fucking ugly, but it sells really well, I don't care. I'm going to load up all my racks with that shitty, ugly blue jumper. You know what I mean? So I was like, oh, yeah, it works. You know, this game doesn't have quite that level. But I'm enjoying... I did finally, interestingly, get a lot of enjoyment, out of, like, placing the racks and getting mannequins and deciding what attire the mannequins can wear. And also exploring the area outside the shop, and I noticed that, you know, there's like a shipping place, which I assume means I can create online orders and start shipping out, like, you know, larger scale clothes. Oh man, every time I do a wrestling show, there's always nonsense in the back of my throat, so I just yell for fucking 4 hours. But yeah, so that's been really fun. That's really, really interesting. There are abilities within the game and options within the game to manufacture like your own designs, and, you know, ideally you can sell them and do well, etc. So that could be pretty cool. I may end up making just some absolute nonsense and pretend that it is art on clothing and sell it. But the one that you mentioned, Max, is Trading Card Simulator.
Mm-hmm.
In the same vein, I was like, oh, I really enjoyed Supermarket Simulator. excuse me, this looks kind of fun because unlike Clothing Store Simulator, which I still enjoyed, as I mentioned, I have a lot of enjoyment out of like, oh, I care about trading cards. Like, it's a fun little facility that run my own in-game nerd store. But there's a couple things that make this game different and that adds to its hook, that kind of adds to its, you know what I mean? That the thing that loves me, that I love. And for that in case is you can open packs of cards. So outside of just, you know, going a box of cards and then putting it on the shelf and selling it, there is the ability to open the cards and sell them individually. So even if, you know, like myself, someone who's not been able to, who's not really grabbed onto a trading card game directly because I've not found one that's hooked my brain in such a way, this gives me all of the feeling that I get from, you would get from opening packs of cards without the financial expense, without microtransactions, nothing. I just get to open and go, ooh, yeah, that one's worth apparently $45. And they're like, ooh, that one's worth $400. And then I get a special little case and I put all the expensive ones in the case and they're essentially my break in case emergency stock. I'm going to put that on the shelf if I need a big influx of money. And second, and I really do find it great that Commodore 256 has jumped in the chat and goes, does that game have smelly Yu-Gi-Oh players? Now, the cards in the game are not Yu-Gi-Oh. They're called Tetramon. They're very clearly a take on Pokemon.
So and Nintendo will too?
Possibly. But they're absolutely different. Like, there's no remote similarities in many of them. Yes. The answer is, does the game have smelly players? And the answer is yes. You can buy cans of deodorant, and there are people that will walk in the store and they'll be covered in a green fog, and then you have to go up and spray them with the deodorant. Otherwise, there'll be dissatisfied customers because these people smell like wet bum holes. It rules. And nothing makes me happier to just be, be standing at the counter, just like, boop. Hey, some guy comes up, he's got like six packets, I'm like, boop, 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 boop. Some guy gets a thing of dice, boop, yeah, sweet. This guy gives me, you know, his items. I look up and he's like this cloud of green gas. I'm like, nah, mate, turn around. I'm like, you get your fucking stank out of here. And I'm just, I spray like half a can on this prick. You just have to spray until the green goes away. But I was like, no. I'm going to send a message. I don't like stank in my trading card store. So I spray him really hard directly in the face, and then he goes, oh, I'm not smelly anymore. Then I take his money and then sell him the cards. That was a stupid question. I knew the answer, but still funny to ask. Dude, says Commodore, and it's absolutely like one of the highlights of the game. The first moment that I realized you could de-stank someone, oh, because as someone that's, you know, My day job prior to the one I have now, I worked in youth mental health using video games as therapy. So like I've been exposed to, you know, that community. And I've also, being a giant nerd myself, I've been to, you know, many nerd stores. And yeah, the body odor is a whole thing. And there is nothing more that I wish I could do in this world, Max, than just walking up and spraying people that stank. So that is it for that reason alone, 10 out of 10 game. But yeah, absolutely, the complete dopamine rush of opening packets and then deciding whether like I want to sell them or not, that alone is what's hooked me like immediately. I actually want to play it right now. Like, I know we have more show to do, but I kind of want to fuck off and then just go play that game, if I'm being honest. Like, I've been you know how I normally play a little bit before work, I play on my lunch break, I might play a little bit after work before, you know, go and make dinner or help dinner or whatever the fuck I do the rest of my day. And that's what it's been. It's been TCG. I'll play a day in the game and go, oh, yeah, make some money. And then I'll, you know, expand the store a little bit. I'll stock some new stuff. I'll be like, oh, man, I can finally afford the license for the next range, you know, the Epic range. And I buy them and I stock and watch them move, open more of those packets. Oh, man. For like the $18 that it cost me, oh, just the personal satisfaction it's given me is ridiculous. Ridiculous. What did you want to know about it specifically, Max?
I think you covered it really well.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, it would have been, obviously, I know being like an indie game, you can't have... Like,
oh, it's got jank too, which makes it even better.
You can't have like trade-named cards.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's cool. That's cool.
Well, because looking at the list of future updates, because the game has just released, so they do have a plan moving forward. And some of those things include literally making the card game playable in the game. So that in and of itself is intriguing, and I want to see how that works. Like, as in when they started building
So you can just run like tournament days and shit and just get everyone to come in to buy packs before they play their game.
Well, that's the thing, because if you set up tables in the game, you run tournaments, right? So people can come in and play whenever they want. And then you can alter, so by depending on the level of tournament that you run or the tables that you run, if you'll run ones that will cost you something per day, you get in-game reward, as in, oh, you have a higher chance of pulling rarer cards, you know, or, you know, you have less commons or whatever, you know, or the cost of packs is less. And so it incentivizes you to pump some money into the actual playing of the game. But when you can then, like, in the future updates, when I can literally play it, oh, well, that's gonna be dangerous, I think. Yeah, giving me that exact dopamine is absolutely crazy. Commodore jumps in the chat, goes, yeah, the con funk. Well, as we're about to head to PAX Australia next week, yeah, we're prepared for some con funk. Let me tell you, it's going to be bad. I walked into a memorabilia store like 10 minutes after they opened, and the place already smelled like farts. It is insane. Like, the smell of unwashed is such an intense smell. It was crazy. But they did jump in with their first post before we got distracted by talking trade card games. It goes, hey, I'm a PC gamer here thinking of moving to console because a lot of things I like about PC don't exist anymore. I'm thinking of going to what you would call the wrong console. But I'm curious of what you have to say. So my assumption reading on that con is, I'm going to write this down in the things. In my 30. So my assumption here, and they're in the chat here on Twitch, they can jump in and add. I'm reading this as Con is contemplating leaving the PC world to head into the consoles and contemplating buying an Xbox is my assumption of the wrong console. Now, granted, we're a PlayStation show, we also don't really care. It's just kind of, this is what we play, this is how we play. That's our preference. Max, what's your advice to Commodore 256?
I mean, going the Xbox route makes sense. You know, you get your Games Pass, you get that, you get the option to play on PC and Xbox. That way, if the console doesn't work out for you, you've at least still got that content available to you via the PC. It's just, yeah, depends on what it all comes down to personal preference and what you want to get out of it and how much you're willing to buy in and how much and what kind of games you enjoy playing. Because if you're just playing those third party titles, if you're just a COD player and or one of those like annualized games player, there really is no reason to not go Xbox for that. PlayStation obviously is where the premium first party titles are. But you know, like I said, if you're a third party player, if you're just in it for those annualized games, like there really is, you know, no problem going the other way.
Yeah. So I agree with you on a number of those things. The way I look at this, Commodore, is looking at the potential reasoning as to why you would want to step away from PC gaming. So I've had a gaming PC, like it was a mid-range, low-key one from a number of years ago. I now have a nice, beefier one that I, shout out to being made redundant and you can spend some money, built this incredible PC. So I myself am finding myself playing a lot more PC titles, as now I can run pretty much anything that I want without any major concern. So I guess it would come down to, as you mentioned, like what, you know, your PC isn't giving you what it previously gave you, right? So I think the key question there is, what is it that the PC isn't giving you? If it's consistent performance, well, I understand a lot of PC ports are a little bit rough these days, so that is a hurdle in and of itself. If it's the inability to like tinker with the settings, That's interesting, mostly because my understanding is like that should be a big doohickey to play. I just click ultra or high and whatever runs smoother
I mean,
for me.
I mean, is it just that I want to sit comfortably on a couch and not sit at a desk?
Like that is absolutely a big consideration is where you'll be locating. For like yourself, Max, you know, you play at the desk you're sitting at, whether it is your console or your PC. So the arrangement or the room where you are is no concern. See, I myself, I have my PC here at my desk in the little recording space, where the other end of my house is the TV. And I have a Ripper TV that I bought with the intention to play games on it. So I find myself gravitating to down that way in for certain games. And obviously there are things if I can't play there, I'll play them here. So as I said, the nature of this show is we just prefer playing on PlayStation. As simple as that. So I think it's most certainly you can go to whichever console interests you. Now, as Max pointed out, if you are someone that has Game Pass and that's what you use the PC for, then consumer facing standpoint, Game Pass rules, no doubt, absolutely no doubt. But going to Xbox, if you have a functional gaming PC that I assume you're not going to sell or get rid of, or on the presumption you have one, to acquire this console, you're kind of just getting a lesser down version of the same thing because the games are going to be the same from a game, if you're using Game Pass, that is, you know, from a direct first party approach, they're all going to be the same. Of course, there is the moving forward, you know, a bunch of potential great exclusives coming out of Xbox's first party studios. But at this very second, sadly, because competition breeds awesome innovation, etc. They're not keeping up in that steady release. Where if you look over, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it just allows you to stay in the same ecosystem that you're already playing in.
Yeah, because you have to have a Microsoft and Xbox account to play on. If you're using Microsoft Gaming or Game Pass or whatever, so it's a transferable account. That's super easy. The other thing is, what about those PlayStation exclusives? Yeah, that's totally true, but If you've previously not been part of that console space, you've more than likely waited for console exclusive titles to come to PC anyway. And looking at PlayStation and their larger focus on releasing their big games on PC as well, you'll just have to wait longer. And by then they'll play better, they'll run better, they'll look better, presumably. Especially if they're the Nixus ports. Nixus do a really, really good job. If it's Last of Us Part 1, yeah, it was rough. That was real rough. But like
Nixus are doing...
they're doing Horizon, which is fantastic. Then there's the Days Gone, which does look, run, and play better on PC than it did on PlayStation 4, at least when we played it. So because we did receive review codes. So we did play it pre-release and in that early days. A lot of it has been patched and fixed now, but... You know, we haven't gone back. The PS5 version. Does it play on PS5? No, it doesn't. I think I made that last part up. So yeah, that would come down to those criteria. Essentially, I said, I don't know, for like 10 minutes just then. So they've jumped in the chat and they've added some clarity. I figured Xbox is desperate for buying more fans, and most games on PlayStation I can also get on cheap PC. Exactly. Like, I feel an ideal gaming setup for $1,200 isn't a $1,200 PC. It's $500 console and a $700 laptop. That's in USD. They've also added, I like the PC environment of the mid to late 2000s when it was conceivable that you could buy PC games in the near future, sold on Blu-ray, that didn't need online activation, and new games were moddable. The newest game people think of with ambitious land mass mods and quest lines, Fallout 4, and then that came out 9 years ago. You can also run on a potato PC, and you can't run your own server with new AAA FPS like you could in 2008. And Xbox PlayStation supports KB&M on some FPS. With that information, does that change anything for you, Max?
Not really.
Yeah. Because the things that you're missing aren't available on console either.
Yeah. And with matchmaking on FPS, if you plug in a keyboard and mouse, you get pulled with the PC players anyway. You don't get crammed in with the console players. They're real sticklers about that now.
Yeah, and absolutely right. Like, So yeah, that will come into play as well. But in terms of sort of the games, mods, etc., not really an often thing. It's been a long while since, as far that I can recall, where PCs, you know, didn't need online activations, etc. you know, it's interesting. Like, I know that Digital Foundry, etc., have done those recent things with the PS5 Pro, like, oh, you can't make an equivalent PC. And that's true. But the difference is the PC has such a staggering more use cases than a console. On my PlayStation, I can play games. Cool. That's it. So they have the ability to make purpose-built hardware that can do that. With a PC, I can do exactly what I'm doing right now. I can stream, I can video call, I can have Discord going, I can go to Twitch, I can have a Word document open, like all these things. So they're comparable in some ways, but also not in others. So like, if you have still got a decent PC, sweet, right? And a gaming laptops, I have a gaming laptop and I barely use it for, I have rarely used it for that purpose. Because they overheat, the batteries are ball bags. I like having a monitor, and I'd be plugging a keyboard and mouse into it anyway. So yeah, it's a tough one. I feel I did and didn't answer that question. back to what we have been playing. Finally, what came out this week, Max? Until Dawn, the remake. So thanks to you, PlayStation Australia, we will provide a review copy of Until Dawn, a remake. We did get it, I know, a couple hours before it launched, so we haven't been able to spend a whole lot of time with it, especially with both of us being parents on a weekend and school holidays. Therefore, the time of which we could play spooky-ass games has been limited. Max, have you been able to put any time into the remake?
I have looked at the title screen, and then I had to turn the PlayStation off.
Oh.
So,
was that spooky?
I have put literally no time into it at all.
Do you have experience with the previous Until Dawn?
Yeah, I've completed it.
Okay, so how'd you get...
I'm ready to play this one.
Okay, I was going to say, like, yeah, are you hesitant? Are you reluctant? Like, you know, so you're pretty keen?
I'm super keen. I want to play through it with Ali, though, and she hasn't... she hasn't been feeling well either this weekend, so it's been one of those things of like, I don't want to get halfway through and then Ali turn around and go, I'm ready now, and then have to start again. So yeah. I'm just waiting.
Yeah, no, I understand that. So like, I played the original Until Dawn, not at release. It was probably a couple of years later. I gave it a little bit of time and I went, I just wasn't feeling it. Like the way my brain goes, I just wasn't feeling it. So I went, nah, I'll come back to that later. And I never did. And then eventually they announced the remake. I was like, oh, I'll just wait to the remake. So I booted it up a couple of days ago. I played the sort of tutorial bit with my partner. So she could sort of get a taste of it to see whether it'd be something that we would enjoy playing together. Now, she's not a big fan of the spooks. So she's like, yeah, to it. But I think the opening cinematic about the butterfly effect and establishing, she got a tickle out of that. And I think it seems that she likes the idea of the branching storyline and, you know, having a different experience. She mentioned, she's like, but what if I'm just anxious that I'll make the wrong call? I'm like, that's what the game is built on, right? Like, it's a horror game. And this is half the suspense is, am I going to make the wrong decision? Am I going to kill the people? Or do I want to kill the people? Because, you know, some of them are bastards. So that was fun. And then today, as myself, my partner Phoebe, my housemate Ange, and my mate Craig, we were all around in the afternoon. And just before we came into here, I was like, let's boot it up. And together, we'll do all the choices. And we'll have like a fun experience that way. So we did the first chapter. That was interesting. You know, it's having a essentially decision by a committee has been fun. Knowing, because we all know each other quite well, we kind of know where we would sway. So that there hasn't been a a moment of debate or contention on a decision or call that we would make. The decisions that we made in the tutorial we played the other day, some of them were matched in this run-through and some of them weren't. So, especially in that tutorial area, I think this is, and this is absolutely by design, the alternate paths mean nothing. Like, it just brings you to the same point. And as, you know, and when you start being spoken to by, I can't remember the actor's name, but he was John Abruzzi in Prison Break. He was the devil in Constantine, who for some reason always feels like he's looking there. He's not looking directly at the camera. He's looking there. And he's living every line that way. And that's really jarring. But yeah, so until you hit that point, and that's where all the choices start to become important and play a role, presumably. So at the moment, we have sort of played towards the character. So as the character goes, oh, you know, these are my definable traits, we play within those criteria, just to be safe as we learn the characters. And so maybe at some point we will piss them off or whatever. As this is a remake, there are, you know, they have my understanding is they've essentially built the game up from the ground up. Peter Stormare, that's the one. What a great name too. It's a shame that I can never remember it. So the world itself in this game has been rebuilt. They are still using the same character models in terms of like the bones, right? Like the motion capture, the original audio tracks. And as a result, there are moments where that looks a little bit fucked. The world itself is incredible. And I do believe that games like Until Dawn or what Supermassive done in, say, The Quarry or, you know, the other in the Dark Pictures anthology, they demonstrate the impact of lighting and depth of field to create a visually impressive game. So in here, the lighting system's completely different. So, you know, things illuminate by themselves and, you know, with ray tracing as well as, you know, HDR, the colors feel amazing and the world itself is remarkable. And I feel that it's doing a lot of the heavy lifting because the capture of each of the individual characters, some of them look really stilted and arse, and like as in, remember in L.A. Noire, where the faces moved way too much, and it's like they're both stiff and fluid at the same time.
And their biggest selling point was like you'd be able to read their facial expressions to tell if they're lying, and you're like, I think you're lying.
Yeah, and they're all like super obvious. So yeah, so there are moments where you can see once again the downside of brilliant, beautiful visual quality. You see those jarring transition moments a lot more if they've not been covered by a switch, like for a camera angle, etc. Because you'll see someone go, nah. And like just like hard drop their facial expression, hard drop their tone. Commodore 256 goes, you would read it even if you were on the spectrum where that's high. I'm on the spectrum. Facial reading, coincidentally, is not one of my biggest troubles. But like, you know, it's not the brilliantest thing. The fact that these faces are doing weird shit is more confronting to me. Like, if it's not an uncanny valley thing. It's gone the other way. It's gone into that unrealistic. I'm looking at this and I'm going, I can't connect because everyone's faces is doing fucking weird shit. there's that. The performances are as fine and janky as they were. Like, you know, even though you've got the likes of Hayden Pepperoni, whatever her name was, and Rami Malek. So, like, these are qualified-ass actors, and even they're delivering kind of stilted-ish performances. And I imagine that's sort of just a challenge because of the nature of the medium at the time, because, you know, the motion capture in the way we do it now is so different to how it would have been done for Supermassive back in the day. Supermassive have built on that up until their, you know, most recent release with The Quarry, sort of, you know, building up to that point. And as a result, with those hard cuts, there are moments where sound design is a little bit interesting in that, you know, the one angle, there's running water in the background, especially when you're in the forest. And then it cuts the alternate and that sound's gone. So like that sound, once again, if you're from a continuity where you're switching the camera, if the sound's here, it should now be over there, but it just disappears completely. So like with someone, like we have an Atmos setup, right? So the intention is in great surround sound. We should be able to pinpoint things where they are. But when they just simply don't exist, it kind of drops that sense of immersion. It's not like a completely game breaking or experience or whatever, but it's just something that I noticed pretty quickly. There were some technical hiccups in terms of pop in, etc.
Adam Lines things.
Exactly. Like if it was consistent,
they're not going to.
Was it, sorry?
So if they don't need to render it in, they're not going to.
Exactly.
As far as they're concerned with that shot, it's a completely different scene. I would imagine, I'm just guessing here, but I would imagine it's just a completely separate scene and that water doesn't exist in that scene.
But no, but in terms of the, like, as in, they're standing on a bridge.
I understand that they're just swapping, but because it's going to have a different layout, and I would imagine it's a different, like, scene in an animation. Because that water's not there, they're just not going to... The sound just won't work there.
Yeah.
Because it's not tied to that section. I mean, I could be completely wrong with it.
But the game itself was, as I mentioned, having not played it to completion or too much previously, I do really like how this game sets up the characters. What by the beginning of the game, there are two, you know, you play as this, you know, one particular character. I don't remember names. It's like seven of them. But as part of the tutorial, those characters no longer become part of the story. But those characters are involved with the remaining cast, and their actions sets up the understanding that they're all kind of assholes. So if you were to then make decisions that would impact them negatively, you can feel like you don't feel bad from playing the experience. But then at the same time, they also demonstrate a group of friends so that you, like, it's that weird line, right? Where it sets up that you could let them all go and die and have their demise, or you could set them up to succeed. And all the individual character flaws are driven to the front very quickly. So the game itself is trying to tell you how you should feel about these characters. And then you have the choice whether to turn into those, like, you know, turn into the skid and build on those stereotypes, or play against them to deliver a particular result, or to see character growth. It's very similar to Max, how you and I played Dark Pictures very differently. I played those games with, I'm in the direct, like I am playing as the characters would experience it.
You try and personify the characters, I direct it as a movie.
Yeah, because you're like, what would make, for you it's like, what would make better at the story right now? What would what would move the plot, how I see it moving forward?
Yeah.
So you're happy to let someone die. You're happy to, like, you know, miss a QTE in order to deliver the result that you're looking for.
Like at the very start of the game, when it tutorials you into, like, the first, like, hold the thing still because of the
The deer, yeah.
I fucked it off straight on. I'm like, I'll deliberately do shit. I don't give a fuck.
Like, 45 minutes later, you're like, hey, you want to shoot this squirrel? Like, yes, bush. Because the game implies you probably shouldn't shoot the squirrel, and you're like, bang.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty sweet. So, oh, Commodore coming with all the facts, and they're a great new addition to this show. Let's see. They go, yeah, I guess it's the transition between expressions. It's absolutely what it is. yeah, you need the dots on the face, and it can be captured at 960 frames per second without much need for interpolation. I think mocap might have been fine, but the issue was transitioning between the expressions. Absolutely. Like, it's kind of that... that fade in and out, like, you know, it's like when you're listening to music and there's an inconsistent fade or the timing alters and you can it feels really abrupt. And even if you were to fade them in, it's not fantastic. But it feels almost as if they delivered the performance and then they looked and went, oh, hang on, the subtle nuances in the expression aren't being picked up. Let's turn everything up 15%. So suddenly a smile that would just becomes, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, in order to make sure that comes across, to remove that minor, like, to amplify the nuances, which in and itself makes them redundant. But I feel like that they're like, weren't confident in the subtle performances delivering the outcome. Where if you look over at games, which I, you know, granted, rose tinted glasses, absolutely adore them. Games like God of War 2018 or God of War Ragnarok, it's those smaller details that Christopher Judge delivers in his performance as Kratos that makes you go, oh, ooh, yeah, and you feel, and like you're looking for it, and like how he just, you know, moves his cheeks ever so slightly or darts his eyes or these little minor things. But yeah, it feels like they've just gone to ensure that you are, you know, not dumb and misreading things. Saying that though, I'm enjoying the shit out of it, and I'm very keen to go back and play some more. You know, because I was the, what was the VR game? Until Dawn, Rush of Blood. I really enjoyed that, but it kind of was more of an experience rather than a direct sequel or feeling within the game. But yeah, wouldn't mind seeing it through a bit more. Max, as you mentioned, someone that has played it before, like, has anything that I said, like, made you happy? Made you sad? And can you overly express it in your face for consistency within the game?
No, I cannot express it on my face for consistency in the game. Look, I'm keen to play it. Like I said, it's one of those things that I don't want to play solo. I think it's just more fun to have that, because especially considering the fact that I play it how I play it as like myself in the director's seat, but Ellie tends to be like, this is how I think this person would play it out.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's fine for you, but I think it's going to be fucking hilarious.
You're like, but I have the controller, bitch, and then they fucking scuffle.
So, now we played, in the, I don't know if it's the same now, but in the other game, we played with Controller H.
Oh, so yeah, yeah.
There was no fighting over it. It's the controller's in your hand. You do it how you want to do it.
And then it randomly picks.
We don't fucking, yeah.
Nice. No, we didn't. I didn't check to see whether that was something that was included in this. We just played with the one controller because it was just easier. Yeah, that was really good. I mean, I'm enjoying it. I guess I'm keen to see more. It does feel like we're heading into October. Now, granted, here in Australia, it's not the same feeling as like, you know, Halloween, October. You know, oh, it's autumn and it's all spooky, whatever. But like, you know, we as a Western country have certainly taken the influence from the US around Halloween. And like, it's October. I'm like, yeah, let's get spooky. So, like, I am, you know, I'm feeling that, like, with the Until Dawn, like, oh, yes, it's a good beginning with Silent Hill coming next week. Like, I'm keen for that spooks as well, and that game's reviewing incredibly well, which has me very excited. Keen to check that out. But I think that kind of hits all the games that I have played this week. So, Max, let's get into the section we call Inform the Players. We tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation.
Let's talk about the funny story. Let's talk Scalpers v. Snitches. So annoyed and disgruntled PlayStation fans who were unable to secure any pre-orders for the 30th anniversary PS5 Pro bundle. I did not get an email from JB, did you?
Nope, I'm sure I didn't. So for context, I didn't. But I only ticked just the PS5 fancy pants, big honking fucking 1700 nonsense.
I ticked everything, got nothing.
Yeah.
Not even a controller.
Oh, interesting. So our good friend, Craig O'Flaherty, as I mentioned, he went in and he ticked a couple. He was provided the option to pre-order the Portal.
He was like, fuck that noise.
No, it's interesting. Like, I didn't tell him to click it. You know, I was like, hey, click PS5, the PS5 Pro bundle. Anything else? I don't give a shit. I got a control through EB Games. All I want is the PS5. If you can help me do that, it'd be amazing. So he ticked it on his own accord. So he now is doing it. Like, you pick the day that you're going to pay the money, and he's going to pay it on Tuesday. And he gets, so the idea is that when he gets it, he made the offer to me. He's like, do you want the 30th anniversary Portal? I was like, what, we'll just swap the one that I have? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, fuck yeah, deal. I don't got to spend any extra money, and I just do a swapsies. They get one, it's all screen protected and doing all that, you know, proof of concept that it works. So big win. I didn't have to even worry about scalping or sniping or snitching.
Annoyed fans who didn't get theirs have been mass reporting scalpers who did. Many of the scalpers happen to be on eBay, and the retailer has reportedly been unusually responsive in taking down these hugely inflated listings. As spotted by PSLS, and Twitter user Jimmy Bowers set out the template for the process. According to Bowers, you're not allowed to hike the price of a limited item pre-release. Thus, these ridiculous listings breach the platform's terms of use in terms of service, and they have been delisted.
Yeah, so it's not an issue with the scalping per se. It's the issue with you're selling a pre-release product at an overcharged price. That is the issue. And I guess it comes down to the individual and your morality when it comes to scalpers, right? I've only ever bought scalped quote unquote or inflated prices on a gig ticket when I was like 16, 17, right? Like, because I was like it was funny enough, Green Day, Jimmy Eat World, My Chemical Romance. I paid way overpriced for the front tickets, but my best concert I've been to. It's awesome. So like, I'm not someone that's easily won over or have the necessity or the disposable income to then go and pay scalping prices. But clearly there are. Otherwise, these scalpers wouldn't be doing it because they would have literally no one to give them money. But saying that though, shout out to the snitches, because I saw on Twitter someone had shared an image of someone putting their JB Hi-Fi pre-order doohickey, but they left their name on it. So, like, the idea is, like, they could go, well, we know exactly who that is, and we can can that pre-order and resend out an email. Now, I don't know whether JB Hi-Fi did that. I assume it was brought to their attention. But we'll wait and see on that. But then the question is, like, does that then get redistributed, and then someone randomly will get emailed?
Who knows?
What's your stance on scalping and all this in general, I suppose?
It's one of those things of like, if people want to spend money on stuff, people are going to spend money on stuff regardless. That's true.
We can't judge how people spend their money. That's true.
But like, it is the perceived worth of an item is depending on what the person who is buying it is willing to pay. It's like trying to deal with fucking Facebook Marketplace assholes.
Oh, goddamn Facebook Marketplace.
It's like, will you take this? I'm like, no, it is set at this price because this is the price that I will take. If you're not interested in it, fuck off.
We've long discussed my my hatred for the haggle. Like, well, don't haggle me. I told you the price. If I didn't want to pay the price for advertising, I wouldn't talk to you.
Because like I used to work in sales, like a very, very long time ago, I used to work in sales. And I loved the haggle. That'd be like, you know, I was working up in Queensland, I was working in a furniture store, and someone would come up and they'd see the price and be like, hey, if I pay cash, can I get it a little cheaper? And I'd be like, let me see what I can do for you. And I'd walk back to my computer and punch in a fucking number, see how much it cost me to, you know, acquire this item. And they'd be like, if you want to do cash, I'll do 200 less. I'm like, cool, bargain. I'm like, yeah, bargain.
I'm still making $1,400.
So like, I love the haggle. The haggle's fun.
No, I hate the haggle because I walk in, I'd go, well, that's not what I'd pay for it, and then leave. And then I'm like, all right, well, I'll go find somewhere that has something similar that I want and that isn't that price. Don't try to fuck me on prices, otherwise you don't get my money.
Capitalist scum.
No, it's the exact opposite. No, what I'm doing is the fucking straight up free market. Yeah. I dictate where I purchase. You're going the old socialist, like, let's barter for it. I'm like, no.
No. I love the butter.
No, the free market says I dictate what I want and you dictate what you want. If they align, brilliant. If they don't, then they'll fucking talk to each other. I don't have to buy through you. If you're the only place, then fuck you. Yeah. Don't know what's going with that one. But Max, Xbox is apparently asking, what about me? Not the hit song by Shannon Knoll, of course, who was a cover from another guy who's, I don't remember. A blog post on Microsoft's game developers website has highlighted the firm's intention to learn why Xbox is being skipped over in favor of other platforms. It's no big secret that certain developers have faced struggles with the Xbox ecosystem in recent times. The biggest example is Baldur's Gate 3, which is delayed on Xbox because of the Series S console's inability to completely run the game in split-screen mode. There have been problems in other areas too. The studio behind Innotria, the last song, made public its struggles to communicate with Xbox, leading to a lengthy delay. Similarly, the makers of 2D Metroidvania Hack, it's in capitals, are bringing the game to PS5, but skipping Microsoft's platform entirely. The new push from Microsoft to improve its relationship with developers is perhaps a result of missteps such as these. It's, quote, all about giving some developers what they need to feel empowered and supported by Xbox, end quote, reads the blog post. Xbox's principal user researcher, Dr. Deborah Henderson, says she wants to hear from, quote, everyone who works on games or helps support game studios because it can make your life easier. It makes gaming better, end quote. Most interestingly, the scope of the research extends to those not making their games for Xbox. Quote, if you aren't on Xbox, we'd love to know why, Henderson says. They add, and honestly, if you're using our competitors' products, you probably have a great perspective we could learn from, end quote. Who wants to jump on this first? Because, whoa, I got things.
I just want to talk to the people that I'm purchasing.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Absolutely. Why put my games on Microsoft when that platform has conditioned their players to not pay for games? And Game Pass, we've learned very quickly, is not good in terms of providing, you know, return value.
But to be fair, just because you're putting a game on Xbox doesn't mean you necessarily have to put it on Game Pass.
No, but like that's the incentive, right? There are two ways. Either you put your game on Xbox and no one buys it, or you put your game on Game Pass and no one buys it because it's all part of it. Like, yes, you get a lump sum payout. And the understanding is, you know, Microsoft will create an amount, offer it to you, and then if you believe that that is more than what you would get if you were just to sell the game on that platform, you might want to take that risk.
Yeah.
But if you believe that you could do more by yourself, then you would decline. But yeah, as you mentioned, like PlayStation, by not having a service like Games Pass, obviously PS Plus is similar, but it doesn't have the day and date, etc. If you want to play it, you buy it. Simple as that. And because of their currently one SKU in the PS5, they're not having to accommodate the likes of the Series S, which, you know, on paper, an awesome bit of kit. Digital only, you know, runs all the same games, just not as pretty. It's a stack cheaper win. But, you know, and we're seeing that reflected in the data as well. I can't remember the exact percentages, but the sell-through of the Series S staggeringly outweighs the purchases of the Series X. So there's no chance, or limited chance, I should say, about Microsoft putting in recommendations, say you can avoid the Series S if you want to. Because with a large percentage of console holders being that, they'll be forever hampered by it. It's the same reason a lot of good third-party titles don't go to Switch, because Switch can't run them. Are there any other factors we've not considered, Max? Because obviously there's the communication stuff. We can't speak to that because that's purely internal. No idea. I've never had to deal with Xbox as a developer. I'm not a developer, nor PlayStation. I can't say, oh, that communication is better than somewhere else.
Yeah. No, I think you've nailed it.
Yeah. Because the only other thing would be of consideration would be like discoverability, right? Like, you know, Switch, yeah, people, like the attach rate on Switch is really, really good, but you're surrounded by shovelware, so you can get lost pretty quickly if you're not some big honking fucking dev. And PlayStation are getting better. It's
trending that way.
But they're absolutely trending that way. So like, I guess the question would be, Max, like, if you were a developer, what would you do?
Look, it's one of those things, like, you want, you know, you have that hope of you want yourself to be seen by as many people as possible to give it the highest chance to sell as possible. But if it's one of those things of, you know, they mentioned Baldur's Gate 3 more recently, there's been Black Myth Wukong and all the, you know, there's, it's really hard to have to design for a lowest common denominator in the Xbox Series S. And because it's such a hamstring to the rest of them, if it's like, if we can't run on this, then don't release it on any of our stuff. And then it's like, well, I've wasted all this time trying to get it to run on this bastard.
Yeah.
We should have just not done it to begin with. And it's, you said, you know, PlayStation has the one SKU. You design it for
currently.
One.
Currently. The Pro is coming out, but Pro is additional. It's not the baseline. The baseline is PS5. At least it appears that way. Because if we're looking at PS4 to PS4 Pro, like, that was how it was established. Yeah. So, sorry to cut you off.
No, you're right. So, yeah, it's just one of those things, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, as I said, like, as a developer, I'd make the same call. Or at least, unless there was... I'm on the presumption that, like, if I'm a developer, I'm some fucking dingy-ass little lower indie guy. I'm not going to suddenly become the head of a good game. Not happening. So, yeah, as we highlighted, like, it's just... It sucks, and it really does suck, because as I mentioned earlier, like, competition breeds innovation. Competition breeds quality, right? If a company has someone to compete with, they make better shit because they need to demonstrate that they are better than the other guy. So yeah, it's, you know, for like the hardcore stupid fanboys, the idea of PlayStation, mopping the floor with Xbox, should. They're like, yeah, hey! Well, not really.
Not good.
No, because, you know how we talk about in PS3, like, even though I disagree with it?
That's how they're getting away with charging fucking $1,300 for their console.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. Like, without the lack of competition, you know, I have issues with the expression, but, you know, the arrogant PlayStation, right? The arrogant Sony with the calls of PS3. And even if we're heading into now with like the exorbitant price of the PS4, the PS5 Pro without altering the PS5's price. Because they're like, well, we're going to sell them anyway, so why fuck with them? In the chat, Commodore 256 jumps back in and says, what do you think of the 9th gen being bad? 4 years in, there are so few games exclusive to the 9th gen. Most are remasters and third-party devs still making 9th gen exclusives as a bad business move. This seems like the backlog generation. Most of the games I'm looking forward to are ports of old games that are on PS1 that are being released on every platform. So for context, what Commodore is highlighting is the amount of games that are releasing on both, say, PS4 and PS5, rather than just exclusively on PS5. Max,
what's... Bad business.
Yeah.
When there's still millions of fucking PS4 users and on PS5 users, it's crazy to cut off that much of a market base.
Yeah.
Same with the games just take longer to make now. Like, it's... You're going to get the same thing. It's easier and arguably, I would imagine, cheaper to pump out a remaster or a remake than to spend time on R&D, creating a new IP, release it, working on it, releasing it. You know, you're looking at 7-ish years these days. You know, it's when Vicky made the joke, the CEO of Larian, who did Baldur's Gate 3, is like, you can expect our game probably no earlier than 2029, but don't hold us to that because it'll happen when it happens.
Mm.
You know, look at Rockstar. Rockstar haven't released a game in like what feels like 30 years. GTA's on 3 generations of consoles.
Yeah, obviously last was Red Dead 2, and that was what, 2018?
Yeah. Like I said, GTA 5 came out on PS3, came out on PS4, came out on PS5. We still haven't seen, you know. So it's just one of those things that, you know, game development is more expensive, more costly, takes longer to do. And to, you know, keep fans buying stuff, they go back to those legacies and make those legacy sequels. You were seeing it in not just games, but film and other media. It's just people really do buy into nostalgia.
Yeah. Why do you think I try so hard to buy a great console?
And it's cheaper to rehash a pre-existing idea that you know what you're doing with.
Mm.
And to create something new.
Absolutely. Like, in the chat, Commodore mentions the PS4 is the new PS2. Yeah, like, the way I see where you're coming from in comparison. I think a better analogy of what's happening is the PS5 is the new PS3. In that, the early days in the PS3, remember all the HD collections we would got? Silent Hill, Sly, the Ico collection, Metal Gear, the Jak and Daxter, Ratchet, like every Prince of Persia, like everyone got a HD collection of all the games of PS2 on PS3. And the understanding there was them to learn the new architecture, and the same reason we Naughty Dog released Last of Us, you know, remastered on the PS4, because they wanted to learn how to use the different platform. I think the delayed transition of exclusive of as in studios not developing for just PS5 but also including PS4, I think it stems on the circumstances that, from which this generation started, because it all kicked in during COVID, where availability was very limited. That with developers having such, and publishers I should say, having such a focus on making all the money immediately, they don't want long-term burn. They went, well, how can we ensure that people will still buy our game? Like, they can't get our consoles right now. If we sell to PS5 only, there's 2 million in the world right now that have a PS5. Well, like, yes, well, presumably when they get a PS5, they might go back and buy our title, but we can't guarantee that. So you may see like a slow, like Miles Morales as an example, had a peak, but like it's still always in the charts and it has like a good little slow rumble.
This is an article from June of this year. As per numbers revealed by Sony itself in a recent presentation shared by PlayStation's new co-CEOs, Hideaki Nishino and Herman Holst, it was revealed that 50% of PlayStation's monthly active user base is still on the PS4. Yeah. It is an equal split of 97 million active consoles monthly, with 49 million users on PS4.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it would be crazy to just cut off literally half of your player base.
Yeah. However, in that same breath, this is a circumstance that PlayStation have made themselves, in that they did it as a response to COVID and the inability to access the consoles. As the consoles became, like right now, and we're seeing it slowly, bit by bit, like bigger games are not coming to PS4. They're coming to, like, we're in that transitional moment now. And like, granted, it's later in the console than it would usually be, because it would normally be at the start of the console, or at least in that early transitional window. But console generations are longer. They're being extended by this incremental hardware. And they're still at that same, but as you said, half of their console owners or active monthly active users are playing on PS4. Like, they could cut them, but they created expectation. The expectation was, hey, it's coming to both. And they did that when they, forget what was the announcement. I think Jim Ryan at the time was like, yo, man, don't worry. You know, Horizon Forbidden West, this game and this game, they're all coming to both, man. Don't freak. Because everyone's like, I can't get a PS5. How can I not play the new Horizon game? So there's a problem they built themselves, very similar to, as we mentioned before, in Xbox and Microsoft, creating the expectation that they don't have to pay for games. They just appear on Game Pass. It's different in execution, but it's similar in its setup, which is interesting. So how is it easily fixed? By just making the call. Just by cutting that cord. Yeah. But we'll wait. Like, it's interesting. Actually, that might be a good thing for question for you, Max. So, an example being Jedi Survivor. Right? That launched.
It just came out on PS4.
Yeah, it launched PS5 version, and now it's got the PS4 version, like a year and a bit later. Like, do you think that's doing simply to meet that they said they would do it? Or did Survivor not make enough that they went, shit, we should probably cater that other half?
Oh, I don't remember them ever saying it was coming to both. I have no idea. Mm. I remember nothing of that game. Like, I no joke. Like, I remember playing it, but I don't remember any of the marketing behind it or whether or not it was coming to both. I don't remember that discourse at all. Mm. It could be. I don't remember seeing anything that it undersold.
Mm. Oh, I'm talking in pure hypotheticals here.
But it's one of those things, or maybe they made enough money and they're like, hey, we can
tap some more money out of this, yeah.
We can afford to put people on it and be like, hey, can we get this running on this hardware? Let's see if they're interested in it.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Certainly an option.
Why not double dip?
Yeah, exactly. People will probably do it. In the same way that people go from PS4 to PS5, we can get $20 out of them, and most of the time they will. Hello, Horizon Zero Dawn Remaster. You're going to get $20 out of me.
Yeah.
I can assure you.
Almost like going from public to private.
Ooh.
In a buyout that's not being handled by Microsoft, European pop culture Ubisoft has apparently been weighed for a joint buyout between Chinese conglomerate Tencent and the founding Guillemot family. This news comes via a report from Bloomberg with sources, quote, familiar with the matter. Ubisoft has lost over half its market value in 2024, resulting in various options being considered for the future of the company. According to the report, one such option is Tencent and holding company Guillemot Brothers Limited jointly purchasing the publisher and making it a private entity. As of April 2024, Tencent holds a 9.2% stake in the company, while the Guillemot family holds 20.5%. Discussions about this potential sale and other options are reportedly at an early stage, so we may not see any movement on the matter for some time. Indeed, 2024 has been a tough year for Ubisoft, with software performing below sales expectations and thus pushing down its share value. One investor has been pushing for the privatization of Ubisoft and even the replacement of CEO Yves Guillemot, with Assassin's Creed Shadows delayed, XDefiant underperforming, and Star Wars Outlaws also struggling to sell. It's fair to say Ubisoft has had a rough time lately.
Yeah.
Do we want Ubisoft to go private?
Well, so this is the thing that that fascinates me. Like, do you remember a couple of years ago when, like, Vivendi came out and were like, you know, we want to buy the fuck out of Ubisoft and we're going to do a hostile takeover. So if anyone wants to sell their shares, hit us up. And then everyone's like, no, don't let Ubisoft be purchased. No, the Guillemot. That was when, like, Ubisoft couldn't be touched and they were fucking killing it. And I do love that the second they've had a couple, you know, granted, they've been rough. They've been not horrible. They're just rough. Everyone's like, yeah, fucking sell. Get out of here. Go away.
Yeah.
So, like,
but that hostile buyout was also before all the, like, allegations of misconduct.
Oh, so much misconduct.
Like, you know, it's one of those things.
Yeah, and, like, it makes sense for that reason why Tencent, you know, Chinese company Tencent, are like, well, you know, we treat people badly all the time. We'll pay you money. You know, I mean, like, for them, mistreating people is the least of their concerns.
Another Tuesday.
Yeah, we could do that. And I guess the question would be, what would be the benefit of going public to private? Now, the only major thing that I can see is the presumption.
They don't have to answer to shareholders.
Correct.
Anymore. I'm like, fuck off. We're going to do what we're doing. It'll either work or it won't.
Yeah.
They don't have to appease these fucking corporate overlord motherfuckers.
But at the same time, those pressures to have a product be financially viable is still a point of concern. So regardless of whether you're privately owned or publicly owned, the requirement of to see exponential growth within the capitalistic system doesn't change. It just, the external pressures are just slightly different. Instead, they become internal pressures. And the idea of, oh shit, we need money to fund this, suddenly becomes way harder. And yes, if they are being handled by the correct individuals, making them go public, as you mentioned, takes away that risk and that pressure and allows them to sit and suss it out and create a great product. Is Tencent the company to ensure that? Fuck no, they're not. So this seems way more of a desperation decision rather than this could be financially better and creatively better. Like, we will make better products because of this. I'm sorry,
I guess it depends on what it is, because as it stands now, they own, between Tencent and the Guillemot family, they essentially own 30% of the company, right? Yeah. So they would need the extra, 70%. And if they split that 50-50, that's 45% each. Oh no, it would give Tencent,
or yeah,
not controlling, I guess.
Well, once again, that controlling is still like it's like, this is where my this very second my brain's not doing what it needs to do. Like, to make it private, do they need to just have, you know, 50% plus one?
No, I'm not down.
Or is it like, it has to be complete? Well, my presumption, it has to be removed.
My guess is no. Because
yeah, there can no longer be shareholders. Like, it's owned by, all shares are purchased.
Yeah.
It'd be complete buyer. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no, the controlling stake is you own them or you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably the only difference. What we got here in the chat here? Commodore 256 jumps in again and says, yeah, a company going private might be good for Ubisoft and the gamers. A lot of things that happen to companies that stupid is because of investor pandering. Or, yes, or exactly, or exponential growth, repeated growth, you can never have a dud time. Same stat, whether you're public or private, that's the standard. Not even the corporate overlord. It could be just a bunch of people that bought 10 shares for $200. True. But, like, their opinion matters less. you know, because it is all whatever. Imagine buying $100 worth of stock for companies you trust every month. There would be a there'd be collective madness. So I'm not a stock guy. I don't get it. It's just gambling for rich people, and I don't like gambling, and I'm not a rich person, so it's not for me. Just not for me at all. But yeah, I truly don't believe that Ubisoft as a company, in the way they are now, will get better. Because I do wonder, you know, if this is on the presumption that they're, in order to, by meeting their shareholders, it has forced them to create subpar products.
Well, the other thing is, are they going to have enough money left over to do anything once they buy everyone else out?
Yeah, that too. Yeah, where are they suddenly going to get investment from, right? You know, once again, if they're like, oh, you know, all the politics or whatever that's in Ubisoft is like, oh, you know, it's killing the games. Yeah, China's, yeah, they're really going to, like, ensure that, you know, the game is good and has, you know, No, not for me. Quick bits, Max, as I write down that time stamp. Death Stranding 2's photo mode may affect the story, so make sure you take good shots. I presume if I take lots of zoomed in photos of what's his name? Norman Reedus' front area, will that affect the game?
I don't know, Kojima's weird, and he's just like, he literally said, he's like, it may affect the story. It may affect their relationship with you, so you want to take good photos.
See, this...
if you, like, make them all look ugly, maybe they'll just fucking hate you in the game.
Yeah. Or, like, yeah, if you take a bunch of, yes, sneaky upskirt photos of, like, you know, Fragile's butt, or, you know, or you're looking right up Troy Baker's little Egyptian skirt. You know, does the game reward you? Because once again, I love Kojima, but this is the guy that made a character in a bikini just because she breathes through her skin, and that was his explanation for creating a sexy character that got all sexy in the rain. So, either or. Dragon Ball Sparking Zero, which coincidentally sponsored a match on WWE's Bad Blood today, which made me laugh really fucking hard. Pre-order numbers are higher than Call of Duty on the PlayStation Store. Good.
That because, makes sense. You can go play Call of Duty for free.
Yeah. Absolutely. Once again, people don't buy, you know. But on top of that, I don't remember. I knew it was a spiritual successor to the Budokai Tenkaichi series, but like on the advertisement today for WWE, there's like,
I'm
actually
pretty
bam.
Sure this is what it was called. I'm pretty sure this was like, that's what it translates to, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. So I love that big branding up the top, just like, bam! I'm like, oh, sick. Because that got me excited.
I'm so excited. I'm hoping that I can play it at PAX. I'm hoping it's somewhere at PAX. I'm hoping
Bandai. I believe it is. I believe it's playable at PAX. I'm not confident, but
you go like hang out.
Yeah, just do that for hours. Get my shit kicked. Like, well, when we play Tekken, just get my shit kicked in. yeah, look, I said, like, I adored Budokai Tenkaichi 2 on PS2. Loved it.
I loved it.
And then like Dragon Ball FighterZ was fine. Dragon Ball Kakarot didn't really grab me. But like, if this is in the same vein as that game, which I adored, like suddenly I'm a lot more excited for Sparking Zero. So I'm maybe down for some bussin'. Lords of the Fallen sequel is to prioritize elevated production values. Now, I didn't play Lords of the Fallen. That was the Soulsborne-ish ripoff.
Yeah.
This production value is its problem?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, it needs to look better. I think the game was cool, but it needs to, yeah. It could be prettier.
Assassin's Creed Shadows reportedly has a co-op mode. Now, Max, you hit me up this other day about it and essentially implied that what you had heard was this was part of the delay, was to implement this co-op mode?
No. Just that apparently this was in development beforehand, but it's not the cause of the delay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah, because I'm saying if that's the course of delay, it's a bit rough seeing as they had, I don't know, 6 months, not even, from you know, sorry, 3 weeks from when it was meant to release. So delaying it 6 months is not enough time to incorporate that whole system. And because you played Unity, which I didn't play, so I've not experienced Assassin's Creed in the co-op fashion. Would it make this game better?
I liked the co-op in Unity, but Unity itself was a whole hot mess. And if they're doing, like, I think it would have worked well for, what was the one where you played as the twins, Evie and the other one? I want to say Alonzo, but that's so horribly wrong. It's like old Victoria.
Yeah.
Might not have even been.
In my head, that was Unity. Syndicate. Thank you, Mute. Yeah.
Syndicate would have worked well.
Yeah.
As a co-op campaign.
Mm. And I guess, this game has just been established in such a way that it would benefit from that split, because you got two definable characters where, like, Origins and Odyssey, they kind of had, you know, the two characters. What was it? Cassandra and Alexios or whatever the fuck it was. But they were the same. And then in Valhalla, they created a completely...
Ivor and
whatever the other one was. But they built it in such a way that it didn't matter. Like, yeah. It was still the one story. Where here, at least from what I've seen... Of the shadows, I've intentionally kept the distance just because I'm like, yeah, I'll check it out later. There seems to be two stories, so it might benefit that way. We would be like, oh, well, we'll just wait and play it at PAX, but then we're not. Power World is now available on PS5 in Japan. Originally, this did delay on the presumption of the Nintendo nonsense. The Astrobot soundtrack is now available on Spotify, Apple Music, etc. And I highly recommend you go and listen to this song. It's called Tight Mites, parentheses, Crystal Cave. This song fucking rules. And it's like by far the best song on the soundtrack. Second to that really gnarly ass metal one when you start going to those lava levels. Oh, it's fucking cool. This one is just like a good little jammy tune. Fucking rules. When I drove my son back to his mum's this afternoon, he goes, "Can we play Astrobot?" And we just played a bunch of Astrobot songs for the drive. And it was really cool initially. And then it wore off really quickly. When you're not playing the game with it, the music is great, but it's like the gameplay really allows you to tolerate game music. And finally, a surgeon has performed surgery on a pig remotely 6,000 miles away using a PlayStation Portal. Jokes. PlayStation Portals do not have that level of good connectivity, let me fucking tell you. Away using a DualSense controller to give pig an endoscopy.
Yeah. Apparently at a 300 millisecond delay.
Ooh. Like, whoop.
Good thing it was just a pig.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Max, any games coming out this week?
Yes. Here are the upcoming games for this week. We have... Where did I pull my list from? Here it is. We have Metaphor Reef Fantasio coming to PS4, PS5, October 11th.
Moist. Dragon Ball Sparking Zero. You're still moist for yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Dragon Ball Sparking Zero coming to PS5, October 11th.
Still moist.
New World Eternum coming to PS5 October 15th. Darksiders 2 Definitive Edition.
Wait, isn't this like haven't they already done this?
No, this is the Definitive.
What edition. The fuck was it called before?
I don't know.
Was it the Death Mastered Edition?
It's coming to PS5 October 15th. Right. Never coming to PS5 October 15th.
Oh, yeah. That was the interesting one. That was like the big wolf and the little wolf. And we got off... Might have available for a code if you want to check it out. You keen?
And that's... Yeah, sure. Why not? And that's everything coming this week.
And Silent Hill.
I think technically October... How'd I skip Silent Hill? Yeah, Silent Hill comes out on the 8th. And I guess Diablo 4 Vessel of Hatred also comes out.
Moist. Actually, Max, I do have a question for you.
PC only, but it's fucking not.
My question for you is, so, as I said, my ex-wife, my dear friend, Millie, mm-hmm. your friend, known her for a long way longer than I have. She is also a big fan of Diablo 4, and mm-hmm. she wants to get this DLC. But there mm-hmm. are three tiers as part of this DLC. There's like mm-hmm. a fuck-off stupid one, dumb cheap one, and then a middle ground. And she's like, which one do I pick? I'm like, I don't fucking know. I said, ask Max. And I believe she hasn't asked you?
Correct.
Fucking hell. She's obviously not going to go the big one, but there's the first one, which is just the DLC itself. And the second one, is it cosmetics? Like, are the cosmetics in these things purely visual, or will they give her any sort of playable advantage if she's selected the second tier?
Cosmetic.
But you sometimes get bumps, or whatever.
No, not for. I'm trying. Where is my? I'm trying to
look at the PS PlayStation Store. Let me have a look.
I'm just opening BattleNet on my PC. It'll be faster.
That's true, because at least the PSN works this week. Yeah, that was crazy. Did you get like inconvenienced by the outage?
I was out all day.
Yeah, I didn't do anything either. It couldn't be any more on PlayStation, but
I forgot to pre-order, preload Throne of Liberty anyway.
Yeah, so there's the Standard, Deluxe, and Ultimate.
So the Ultimate Edition, I'm pretty sure,
Early Access as well. Yeah. All right, so here we go. The Deluxe Edition, which is the middle tier. This is the one that she wasn't sure whether she should or shouldn't get. You get the Vessel of Hatred DLC, the Nahantu Veil Walker Spiritborn Armor, I presume that's, plus immediate access to the below items in Diablo 4. So you get some advantages within the base game, but then also another set of armor.
What items?
The Heratli canine pet, the Nahantu Warcat mount and armor bundle, the Wings of the Damned cosmetic, and one season premium battle pass token.
And you get a battle pass token to pick which battle pass you want to unlock for free. So if something tickles your fancy in the first one, you can unlock it, otherwise you can hold on to it until you want to unlock one.
Because like in the dots here, it's Diablo 4 base. Oh, hang on. Upgrading additions will not re-grant in-game items already on. Oh, okay. That doesn't change anything. So are they all like just functionally useless and just about making your character pretty?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Then she get the base game then. That's problem solved. She could have just asked you instead. That's doing here because I forgot until right now. Because she's like, I'm like, I don't fucking know. I've never played Diablo. Even if I had, I don't know. Plays DLC. But anyway. All right, that does bring us to the end of the show. Big thank you for everyone joining us. Big thank you to everyone here on Twitch that jumped in the chat. That includes Mute, Big Shep, the recent big awesome chatter, Commodore 256, as well as our good friend Craig at the Mullet Show. It was entertaining. Good. I hope. That is normally the goal. I do hope you have enjoyed it for what it was, Commodore. Hope to see him around. But Max, let's get out of here.
Alrighty, everybody. This PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time now. On podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/popculturist. We can watch us record this show live. We can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation Pod. If you are listening to us on podcast service, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, and comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/popculturist, where you can buy shirts and other assorted shit with our logos on it. But until next week, which will likely be delayed because of PAX Oz, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was for the players. Now, on the off chance that Shuhei Yoshida listens to this show, because he is in Melbourne this week for PAX, hey, yo, dude, what's going on? Do you want to come, like, yo, SP? You want to come have a chat with us? We're going to hang out? There's a panel you might be interested in. You declined already? That's cool. Thanks, man. We'll be right back.